Members of Congress, federal employees, and national park visitors are all unhappy about the government shutdown. Good evening, I'm Courtney Anderson.
And I'm Connor Ballantyne, and that shutdown tops our news tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
We'll have comments from the congressional delegation and reports from Dan Boyce and Katrin Fry on the fallout from the shutdown. We'll also tell you some of the steps the University of Montana is taking to deal with its shrinking enrollment. And in our feature interview, News Director Sally Mock talks with State Insurance Commissioner Monica Lindsay Dean about the first day of enrollment in Obamacare. The partial shutdown of the federal government continues today, and both sides of the political spectrum continue to blame each other. Members of Montana congressional delegation remain entrenched in their positions. Republican Congressman Steve Daines has been voting for measures to defund or delay the Affordable Care Act, the primary source of tension between the parties. Daines says Montanans he has been speaking with do not want the government shut down, but he says they also want to make sure they are protected from the effects of Obamacare. Daines says Republicans are taking a rational position, looking to delay by a year the mandate that individuals buy health insurance. That's the same delay that has been granted to businesses for covering their workers. Also, Daines says Republicans want to remove an exemption given to members of Congress and their staff for purchasing health insurance on the Obamacare online marketplace. Daines says democratically controlled Senate is digging in its heels when it should be negotiating.
It's so important for both sides to sit down and find a way forward. And Harry Reid has been absolutely unwilling, immovable, to sit down and negotiate. The president has taken the same position. I think that's an unreasonable position to take. I think we're taking the reasonable position here.
Democrats in the Senate see it very differently. Senator John Tester believes a minority of conservative Republicans in the House are single-handedly stopping a large number of federal government employees from working.
You cannot negotiate when there's a gun held to your head. And whether it's a government shutdown or whether it's a debt ceiling in 2 weeks, this is new ground. And if you give on the continuing resolution to keep the government open, it's only going to get worse. The fact is we're about negotiations. We need to use the regular process, so not a hostage-taking process.
The Montana Department of Labor and Industry says there are about 12,600 civilian federal workers in Montana. It is not clear exactly how many are impacted by furloughs from the shutdown. Governor Steve Bullock says nearly 600 Montana National Guard soldiers and airmen have also been sent home.
Workers with the U.S. Department of Agriculture make up the biggest portion of Montana's federal workforce. The State Department of Labor and Industry says there are about 3,000 USDA employees in Montana. Capitol reporter Dan Boyce looks into how the shutdown will impact the state's ag industry.
Sandy Messenger works with USDA Rural Development in Montana. She's a state housing specialist. Messenger's not going to work right now. She's on furlough because of the shutdown. She says it's frustrating and hurtful.
So you're on this like huge rush towards the end of the fiscal year to get your job done, and then October 1st, you know, you're non-essential.
She says her agency does all types of financing for rural areas.
Libraries, hospitals, police cars.
There's housing, like the work she does. And of course, agriculture-related financing, grants, loans, work on all that stops. But the Montana Farm Bureau says the impacts won't be felt too severely at first.
I don't think that 90% of the ag industry would even notice the shutdown immediately.
That's the Farm Bureau's Vice President for Governmental Affairs, John Youngberg.
You know, essential services are still going on, the inspection services, anything that deals with safety.
However, Youngberg says that would start to change pretty quickly if this shutdown went on for a couple of weeks. Then the impacts to the ag community would start to become more severe. Sandy Messenger with the USDA says she can't believe it's gone on this long already.
I'm hoping I'll be called back to work tomorrow. This seems so ridiculous that I can't even imagine it going longer than a week, because it's going to hurt small businesses. It's going to hurt a lot of people other than just the government workers.
Still, when it comes to those government workers, she worries about the low-wage earners in her office.
The technicians, predominantly women, you know, single moms, head of households that are living paycheck to paycheck. This is devastating.
The Montana Department of Labor and Industry says federal employees furloughed by the shutdown are eligible for unemployment insurance benefits, provided by the state. I'm Dan Boyce, reporting at the Capitol.
Arguably, the most visible effect of the government shutdown is the closure of 401 national parks, including Glacier Park. Flathead reporter Katrin Fry spoke with would-be visitors to Glacier and has more on what park closure means.
I'm standing at the entrance to Glacier Park in West Glacier. The roads are blocked off with orange and white striped blockades. The building at the entrance has all the windows are shuttered. There's a handwritten sign in one window that says, "Sorry, park is closed due to government shutdown until further notice."
We come from Virginia. We were here about 7 years ago.
Ken Gilman says he and his wife, Jeannie, try to visit national parks every year.
We've been down to Grand Canyon this year, and both South and North Rim, then went to Zion National Park, and then went to Bryce Canyon. What a fantastic place that is.
Gilman met up with his sister, Kathy Heaney, and her husband, Art, from Southern California, who came to visit Glacier for the first time. Heaney says they rented a cabin in neighboring Columbia Falls, intending to spend the next several days exploring the park in the fall.
It's cooler, the kids are back in school, and it's just a nice time to get out of town and visit some of the national parks. Like I said, last year we went to Yellowstone, and a couple years before that we went to Yosemite, but we thought we would venture up into Montana.
Do you think that you'll come back?
I would love to someday, but I think I'll make sure that there's a budget in Washington, D.C. before I plan to come back.
Louise Bridoux traveled from the north of France via Spokane to hike and possibly do some backcountry camping in Glacier Park.
It's our first time in the U.S. We come from France, so yeah, I think it's going to be the last.
Glacier Park counts on between 50 and 60,000 visitors on average coming to the park in October. Public Affairs Officer Denise German with the park says would-be visitors have had a lot of confusion about what it means for the park to be closed.
That the park is closed to visitors right now, it's closed to all recreational use. Any visitors that are in the park at this time will be asked to leave. Anybody that's camping or lodging in national parks across the country are allowed 48 hours to vacate and to find new area for camping or lodging.
This means no hiking, no biking, no driving along the open portions of the Going to the Sun Road. German says Glacier Park has 135 year-round employees. They bring on more for the busy summer season, and this fall have about double that. She says of about 250 employees, only about 25 are staying.
And for the most part, that includes law enforcement folks, emergency personnel, firefighting folks, folks that work with our utilities, like our water systems. So a variety of folks to help maintain the park in a closed nature.
People who are staying are still on furlough and non-pay status right now.
I don't think there's ever a good time for employees to go on furlough in a non-pay status. I don't think there's ever a good time to tell your visitors, you know, we're closed today and you can't come in, type of thing. And then as far as getting work done, you know, moving forward on contracts and closing some facilities for the season, it's hard. It's very challenging.
German says construction of the Going to the Sun Road is continuing as the weather allows. While I've been standing here at the entrance to Glacier Park, I've seen numerous cars pull up, see the sign, turn around, drive off with license plates from Oregon, California, Texas, Illinois, Wyoming, South Dakota, Washington, as well as Montana plates. German says they're shut down, so they will not be updating the website or social media. She says to keep an eye on the news and what happens with budget talks back in Washington. Reporting from Glacier Park, I'm Katrin Fry.
Representative Steve Daines says he's urging the U.S. House to pass appropriations to fund the National Park Service and the Veterans Affairs Division through the government shutdown. In a press release, Daines says the national parks are critically important to the state's economies. As we reported earlier, Republican Daines supported the House bills tying cuts or delays in Obamacare due to the budget resolution.
And in other news from around the state, University of Montana administrators briefed university faculty and staff today on the impact of shrinking enrollment on UM's budget and warned that one-time cuts made last year will likely become permanent. UM's enrollment has dropped by over 400 students this fall compared to last and by over 1,100 students over the last 2 years. Mike Reed is UM's vice president for administration and finance. He says it will take a few years for UM to rebound from those smaller classes.
We don't see an increase in our revenues for the immediate future. It's going to take 3 or 4 years to start seeing the revenues come back, so we need to make sure that we're living within our means.
The university is looking at finding over $600,000 in savings this year and at making one-time cuts permanent. The university is also going to change how it allocates its shrinking resources.
And that means that the departments that have the demand are going to grow, and the departments that have a diminishing demand are going to shrink. And I'm not just talking academic departments. We're talking services and support across the whole institution. Where there's the demand, we need to get the resources there.
UM President Royce Engstrom outlined several steps the university is taking to boost its student recruitment and enrollment, but administrators note that effort will take time to yield results.
Missoula's new domestic partner registry may not pack a lot of practical punch, but the woman who led the effort to establish the registry says that's almost beside the point. The registry essentially allows unmarried couples, straight or same-sex, to have their relationship recognized by the city of Missoula. It was approved by the Missoula City Council this summer on the same day the U.S. Supreme Court struck down a federal law denying benefits to same-sex married couples. Ward 4 Council Representative Caitlin Koppel, who led the effort to establish the domestic partner registry, describes the registry as a historic, but concedes it has few practical ramifications.
This is really a statement as much as anything, in that we're saying that the city of Missoula recognizes the rights and inherent dignity of LGBT and other couples who want to make that commitment but maybe can't or don't under the law. So the wallet card that will come for registered couples is helpful in that it's something that hospital workers and first responders can use so that they know who to contact in case of an emergency. The other significant thing about the registry is that in the states that have banned marriage equality or used to ban marriage equality, similar to Montana, cities led the way in helping change that statewide policy. So certainly my hope and my intention is that we work at every level of our democracy until everybody is treated the same way under the law.
Missoula is currently the only city in Montana with a domestic partnership registry.
I've had couples write in when we were first discussing this from Helena, from Billings, from Bozeman. We're really looking forward to having the chance to come out in this way and to show, you know, their elected officials that they do in fact exist, and that there are couples in Montana who would really like to be able to have their relationship recognized in their city and in our state.
When considering whether or not to apply, couples should know the official application forms and the names of partners listed on the registry are public records.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, coming out is always a risk, and it's probably not for everyone, but I think coming out is always an act of bravery, and until we live in a society where, you know, young people aren't killing themselves because they're gay or lesbian and fearful of getting kicked out of their homes, I think it's incumbent upon us who are leaders and who are adults in the community to think seriously about that risk and, you know, be willing to take that risk if it makes sense for our lives.
The Missoula Partnership Registry form can be picked up at the city clerk office or online. Just Google the city of Missoula's website, then plug Partnership Registry into the site's search box.
State Insurance Commissioner Monica Lindeen has been traveling a lot lately, answering questions from Montanans about Obamacare and what it means for them. Today is the first day of a six-month period when the nearly 200,000 Montanans who don't currently have health insurance can enroll in one of several insurance options offered under the Affordable Care Act. Last night, we told you the details of how to enroll. In tonight's feature interview, Lindeen talks with News Director Sally Mock about the overall impact of Obamacare on Montana. Even though people can start signing up today, Lindeen advises them to take their time.
In fact, I'm actually encouraging folks to kind of hang back and do their research first and see if any of the technical glitches that might occur get all ironed out first. So I think people should go ahead and do the research and then look at getting signed up. Open enrollment begins today through the end of March. But if you want your plan to actually be effective by January 1, you'll want to actually purchase by December 15th.
And Monica, why has this been so confusing for the public? I know you've been asked that, but it does seem that it's been out there a long time, mm-hmm. but the push to educate people about it really is fairly recent. And maybe that push should have started sooner, or what do you think? Who's at fault here?
Well, I wouldn't say that anyone's really at fault. I think that there's been a lot of information out there, for the last 3.5 years. It's just that not all of it has been correct. There's been a lot of political maneuvering that's gone on around the Obamacare issue. And
demagoguing, one could say.
Well, that could be as well. Our office has actually been trying to educate the public for 3.5 years. But, you know, human nature is such that most people really wait to find out how it's really going to affect them about deadline time. And so now that we have a deadline in front of us, people are definitely wanting to find out the facts, and that's what our office is out there doing. We're out there providing facts so people can find out this is how it really affects me and my family or my small business. And then they certainly can make the decision on their own as to whether or not they want to go ahead and pursue this.
It's estimated that about, I think, 200,000 Montanans don't currently have health insurance.
Approximately. About 195, somewhere around there.
Right. It's a lot.
A lot, yes. A lot of uninsured Montanans.
How many of those do you expect to sign up?
That's a really good question.
You don't really know?
Well, you would hope that the majority would, but even if everyone who is eligible did, we're still going to have a gap. And that's because we do not have Medicaid expansion here in Montana. So
the legislature voted against that.
Right. So you're still going to have approximately 50,000 people who are going to be without coverage as a result of not having expanded Medicaid.
And these are the poorest of the poor.
These are the working poor of Montana. Absolutely. And so they can't afford to go out and purchase coverage on their own.
And they won't get a subsidy because the act presumed that states would expand Medicaid.
Exactly.
And Montana is one of the states who chose not to.
Exactly. If you fall underneath the 100% of poverty level, you're not eligible for those subsidies or tax credits.
Will those people be penalized for not getting it since they can't afford it and they're not covered?
I would say that most likely they wouldn't, because many of them probably don't make enough to even file a tax return. There are exceptions to the penalty.
Because the penalty is on your taxes.
Right, right. So it really, I would hesitate to say that's the case in every case, but generally, yes.
Some people will choose the penalty over paying for coverage,
sure,
because the penalty, when all is said and done, it's still going to be less than, for most people, what the insurance would cost.
Sure. There's a phase-in of the penalty over 3 years. The first year is the cheapest penalty. It's $95 for the entire year, or 1% of your family income, whichever is higher. And then it goes up over the course of the next 3 years.
There will be, undoubtedly, many more people who will sign up who don't have health insurance now. Tens of thousands, probably, would be safe to say, don't you think?
Sure.
Is Montana's healthcare system prepared for this influx of people who will suddenly be able to make a doctor's appointment and may have surgery that they have put off because they didn't have insurance and so on? Mm-hmm. Is the healthcare system in the state ready for this?
I think Montana's healthcare system can handle the influx. I mean, certainly we do have a shortage of primary care physicians in the state. I think that's the case everywhere, not just in Montana. But you have to remember that a lot of these folks who haven't had coverage in the past, they're utilizing our system already. They're showing up in emergency rooms with critical issues. They're utilizing our emergency room as their primary care provider. They're getting surgeries. And literally, it's just costing the system more money in that case, because then you have hospitals writing off charity care, which those of us who then have coverage are paying for in higher expenses.
Well, this is the rationale for mandating that everybody get it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
There are employers around the country who are saying to their employees, we've been covering you, but now we're not going to. We're going to set you free to, so to speak, to go get insurance on the exchange.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me first clarify that employers who have less than 50 employees are not required to have coverage for their employees.
Which is most employers in Montana.
Especially in a state like Montana. Something like 90% of our businesses are small employers.
But some of those small employers now provide insurance and are saying, look, we're not going to do that now because you can get it on the exchange.
Well, and what they're saying is that, I mean, let's remember that. And I was an employer once, okay? And one of the things you want as an employer are good employees, because they're going to make your business successful. So if I've been giving coverage, healthcare coverage to my employees in a small group plan, and now all of a sudden this new marketplace comes along, and it turns out that it may be more beneficial for my employees and me if they purchase instead in this small group, or excuse me, in this individual marketplace, as opposed to continuing to be on this small group plan. So what I'm going to do then is I'm either going to give them the money that they need to purchase that through higher wages, or I'll find some way to make sure that I'm helping compensate for that in the same way that I paid for it before. They're just going to get it somewhere differently.
But they will be looking at their bottom line and say, I'll save money if my employees go and get this on the exchange versus me having to provide it. Aren't some saying that?
But they're not going to just say, I'm not going to pay anything for that any longer. I'm going to help you get that coverage and that.
But they don't have to say that.
They don't have to, but if you're an employer who wants to continue to have a successful business and have employees stay with you, you're going to help them get that, pay for that coverage, even if it's in the individual market, because you want to retain those employees. Otherwise, they're going to go somewhere else.
The bottom line, Monica, isn't it that some people, maybe most, who sign up for the new insurance offered on these exchanges will be paying less for better health coverage than they have in the past?
For many people, yes, absolutely. We were pleasantly surprised when the insurance companies that are offering those plans actually filed the rates with our office, because obviously, you know, nationally, all we'd been hearing about was that we're going to have this huge rate shock, and that's not what happened here in Montana. We have three companies, Blue Cross Blue Shield, Pacific Source, and the new Healthcare Co-op. And on average, the rates are actually slightly lower. And so we were very pleasantly surprised, as I said. And I think once Montanans look at those rates and those products that are available and then apply the tax credits on top of that, yeah, many Montanans will get some very affordable health care coverage.
Some will be paying more, though.
There's always going to be somebody that pays a little bit more. There's no doubt. And frankly, the older you are, before you reach that magic age of 65.
And get Medicare.
Yeah, and get Medicare. I mean, you are going to tend to have more health issues, and so you're going to pay more. And if your income is higher, because there are folks who are in their early 60s who still make, you know, $75,000, $85,000, $95,000 a year, they're not going to get that tax credit, a large tax credit subsidy, so they're going to end up paying a little more. But you could be in that age group and be making very little and get a pretty good tax subsidy to kind of make it more affordable.
In the end, Monica, and I know you support the Affordable Care Act, in the end, do you think Montana is going to be a healthier state when all is said and done? Because the idea, of course, is that people will suddenly have access to preventive health care and to regular health checkups and so on because they have insurance now to go do mm-hmm. that. And that should make the state on the whole healthier. Do you think that's the outcome?
I think it'll help make the state healthier. And at the same time, I think it helps in the long run hold down the cost of care. Because if we are smart consumers of health care, if we're getting that preventative care up front, then we're not going to have those more expensive conditions necessarily in the future, which just are driving up the cost of health care. And if we're all in the pool, if we're all insured, we're spreading the risk, that's a good thing for everyone when it comes to
and
cost.
And that's the if that we don't know the answer to yet.
Yeah, and that is going to be the question. You know, we're sitting here on the University of Montana campus, and frankly, it's the young people that are going to make the difference in whether or not this works in terms of spreading the risk, is making sure that we have young people in the pool.
Well, I've been speaking with Monica Ledeen, the state auditor and state insurance commissioner, and of course, we've been talking about the first day to sign up for Obamacare. Monica, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, Sally.
For more information about the Affordable Care Act, go to the website montanahealthanswers.com.
And now for tonight's weather forecast for west of the Divide. Tonight, rain showers are likely with some fog. Lows will be in the mid-20s to lower 30s. Tomorrow will be mostly cloudy with fog. Highs will be in the upper 40s to mid-50s. For central Montana, tonight calls for cloudy skies with a slight chance of rain showers in the evening and lows around 30 to 40 degrees. Tomorrow, expect partly cloudy skies with highs in the lower 50s. And for southwest Montana, tonight will be mostly cloudy with a chance of snow and rain showers with lows in the 30s. Tomorrow, expect partly cloudy skies with highs around 45 to 55 degrees. And now for the editorial comments of Pat Williams.
The Republican Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives, John Boehner, and I are friends. We have seldom visited since I left the Congress back in 1997, but during John's first year in the U.S. House, I was the chairman of an education committee on which John was a member. John, despite our political differences, was attentive, engaged, and always considering fresh ways, as he saw them, to improve the nation's schools. I liked him, and I still do. Although now I am troubled by the policy and political muddle in which he has been cast, it is also very disappointing for me to note that he seems to prefer to follow rather than lead. Boehner, although a genuine corporations always come first Republican, is far more moderate than his four dozen Republican members of the House who agree with the take-no-prisoners radicalized creed of their Tea Party constituents. That minority within the House majority trampled roughshod over the preferences of most Americans by taking the U.S. federal government hostage to their demands that national health care be killed. The John Boehner I knew would not agree with the brinkmanship procedures that are now imposed by a handful of his Republican colleagues. Why, it was only a year ago that Boehner broke with his arch-conservative majority leader Eric Cantor and majority whip Kevin McCarthy by supporting compromise legislation to prevent a federal debt crisis and agree to limit spending and increase federal taxes on families earning $500,000 a year. So what's happened to John Boehner? Why is he part of holding this country hostage and shutting down the federal government? John Boehner is not that absurd. However, this year's Boehner seems to feel the speaker's cloak slipping from his shoulders and apparently is unwilling to jeopardize his vaulted position. Thus, he continues to substitute ducking and dodging for bold leadership. Perhaps it was too much to hope, but wouldn't it have been historic if the Speaker of the House, John Boehner, told his Republicans to either act like adults or find themselves a new speaker? This is Pat Williams. Thanks for listening.
Pat Williams is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Connor Ballantyne.
And I'm Courtney Anderson. Thanks for listening, and please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.